Well, COVID-19 protests, civil unrest, and election results is just another typical week in South Dakota. Not really. And that's why we've called in the Dakota Political Junkies. We welcome John Schaff. He's professor of political science at Northern State University in Aberdeen. Welcome back, Professor Schaff. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me again. Good to be here.
Greetings as well to Tom Dempster, former assistant majority leader of the South Dakota State Senate. Hello, Tom. Welcome back.
Something, Lori. Delighted to be here. Thank you for the opportunity.
We are going to follow up with what China was reporting, really with a statewide look at protests and the governor's response and local municipalities' response. But I first want to talk about the election because we had a primary election yesterday. People like Lee Qualm, who was the leader of the state house for the Republicans, unseated. What, John Schaff, let's start with you. Some of the big picture clarity that we have now that the votes have been counted, although there are some precincts that are still working on reporting.
Well, I think that you led off talking about Lee Qualm, who I think was trying to move up to the Senate. I think there's the two big takeaways are we did have some statewide primaries with Senator Rounds and Representative Johnson. I don't think anyone really thought that they were in danger at all, but it was interesting just to see how much of an opposition within the Republican Party those two might get. In both cases, it was about 20%, still won handily. But also, I think it is true within the Republican Party, I think there were a handful of primaries to look at where you might say people who had taken more strident views or maybe controversial views ran in primaries. One of them was Representative Qualm, who's trying to move up to the Senate, who took a lead, you might say, in the accusations against a couple senators about intoxication during our special session, sponsored a bill about vaccinations that many people found controversial. He was defeated in a primary. Isaac Lateral, a longtime conservative representative from T area, was also defeated in a primary by Herm Otten. Senator Lateral, I think, was also a co-sponsor of that vaccination bill. Out more in the Rapid City area, Janet Jensen ran in a primary for state senate in District 33 against David Johnson. Of course, her husband is Phil Jensen, who did win last night in his representative House district, but in the Senate district, Janet Jensen lost. So if anything, it seems like the people who took more strident positions or more controversial positions within the party, and you might remember that Phil Jensen was one of the people who accused those two senators of being intoxicated during that special Senate. A special session, and all these people lost, and I think that's interesting that you might say the more conventional candidates were successful, and the less conventional candidates, if you want to put it that way, were unsuccessful.
Yeah, to clarify, it was a veto day, that sort of marathon veto day when those accusations.
Yeah, veto day, you're right, not special session. Yeah, veto day.
Yep.
Sorry, yes.
And John, Phil Jensen is particularly interesting because he won his seat, the seat that he just was reelected to last night after defeating Jacqueline Sly, who had taken a lead on the Blue Ribbon Task Force in increasing teacher pay. So he's no stranger to controversy. But it is interesting to see how this has continued to play out in his political career as well. Yeah.
Yeah, though it'd be within his district. There were three Republicans running for two seats. That does make it easier. You only have to finish second, which indeed he did. He finished second, about 8 points behind Taffy Howard, who was the top vote getter in that district for the Republicans. So I don't know historically how he has done in these things, so I don't know if that's an increase or a decrease. But I guess it's worth noting he didn't get the most votes, put it that way, from Republicans within his district. But historically, I don't know if that's how he's run in that district or not, so I can't really speak to that.
Yeah, sorry, neither can I. I don't have a recollection of that. Tom Dempster, takeaways broadly from the primary elections, and then we can, sort of move along. What do you think needs to be said about how the primaries unfolded?
Well, just very quickly, John, I'm glad to hear you say that Lee Qualm was trying to move up to the Senate. I always, having only served in the Senate, I always thought.
How about over to the Senate?
Thank you for that acknowledgement. You took the words right out of my mouth. My takeaways, Lori, are, number one, it's really tough to run a primary campaign in COVID circumstances. I can't imagine what you'd have to do in order to win elections, particularly an upstart election where you're taking on an incumbent. It's got to be just about impossible. Representative Lee Kwong's defeat. One of the things that you first do when you come to appear as a representative or as a senator is everybody's passing around sign-up sheets for you to sign up on people's bills. If you are a sponsor of a bill, you own it. Your name is on it. It is yours. I felt that vaccine bill, as an expression of liberty, was outrageous because you impact the lives of everybody else around you. His opponent took that issue on and won successfully on that issue. The secretary my takeaway from the election is democracy works.
On that note, John Schaaf, I'm going to kick this one to you, and then we will move on to protests and the governor's response. But I see quite a few people kind of griping about their ballots, because if you're registered as an independent, your ballot is kind of limited. It's a little bit, I think I called it measly. For example, in Minnehaha County, if you're registered as an independent, you did not get to vote in the Republican primary, which included the race for attorney general. It was a barn burner of a race, 3 Republican candidates, lots said in the press, very important, an important position, and it impacts a lot of people's lives on the local level. And yet the whole thing is decided with only people who are registered in the Republican Party. Some of the response on Twitter has been, well, I registered Republican because I want to have a say in these things. And other people are saying that's not how we should be doing. And people are talking about the process itself. Should that be how it ends up, where only one party has a say in something as important as a state's attorney's race? And parse that out a little bit for us from a political science standpoint.
Yeah, well, you know, there are two basic kinds of primaries. There are more than two, but basically there are two. Closed primaries are, as it sounds like, it's closed, so only members of the party are allowed to vote in that primary. Open primaries are usually open to, you declare on that day which ballot you want, so you don't have to be a member of a party to get that party's ballot. Or you open it up, the party ballot, to non-party members, if you would like. What's going on, as I understand it, with the state's attorney race is that you've got a partisan race for state's attorney, but because in the state of South Dakota, Republicans have a closed primary, but the Democrats open their primary up to independents. So if independents want to vote in partisan races, they can only do so on the Democratic ballot. Well, if there are only Republicans running for state's attorney, they don't show up on the Democratic ballot. And so, as you say, you don't get a chance to vote on that. You could look at that two ways. One, it's denial of people to vote for a particular office, and as you say, an important office, the state's attorney office. But, you know, per se, nobody's being elected state's attorney yesterday. What we're doing is we're having political parties choose who their nominees are going to be in the fall, but the Democrats apparently failed to field a candidate, as I understand it. Again, I'm not from Minnehaha County, so this is how I understand it. And we had something similar in Brown County a year ago when we had a sheriff's race, a partisan race, but the Democrats didn't field a candidate. So the only election was during the primary because only Republicans ran for sheriff. And so if you weren't a Republican, you had no chance to vote for sheriff. So if you look at that as being unfair because you're denying some people the right to vote on a very important position. But on the other hand, you could say it's on the Democrats in both these cases for not fielding a candidate, because the point of a primary is not to elect someone to an office. It's for the party to choose a candidate. And so there is a question of why would, if you are not a member of the Republican Party, why do you get a chance to decide who the Republicans nominate for various offices? But in some cases, the Democrats don't run a candidate, so effectively – in our state, that's how it often works out. Effectively, the Republican primary is the election. Maybe the question we should be asking is why positions like sheriff or state's attorney are partisan elections when, and I think I can understand why, but at least nominally, these are positions where it really should not matter what party you are if you're state's attorney or sheriff, and that might be the question.
Yeah. Lots to talk about there, but I want to make sure that we move on to talk about really the biggest news story of the week. And if you can say that during an election week, I'm not sure, but here it is. And it has to do with these peaceful protests and lawlessness that occurred. Or I shouldn't say lawlessness. I should say some crimes were committed, to be very specific. And I want to kind of get into that. And I'll start with you, Tom Dempster, because part of this is the rhetoric of what is a riot? What is lawlessness? What is a lawful assembly and an unlawful assembly? But let's start, Tom, with this broader idea of the governor, the National Guard, you know, police presence during peaceful protests, thousands of people turning out with signs. How do you think overall we are seeing our governor respond to the protests over the death of George Floyd and a call for, you know, a better police force versus trying to, you know, maintain the order that she wants to see in the state?
Lori, it's really hard, and it simply has to be a high wire act. You can look at a demonstration as a pot that is simmering, and it's so easy for that pot to come to a boil. You can look at a demonstration as a dog on a leash, and in this particular instance, for sure, the name of the dog is Absolute Outrage, and it's very difficult for that leashed dog under control making an explicit statement that is absolutely the right statement to make. It's really easy for that dog to become unleashed. As I watched our governor and as I watched Mayor Sioux Falls and Hawkins a couple of days ago, I thought both of them were particularly impressive in saying, I identify with the need of the demonstrators to say what they want to say. I identify with the outrage that we all have with the death of George Floyd. It was almost, they didn't say this, but maybe the mayor did. It was almost as if they said the death of George Floyd was the death of every man. It's the death of our hopes and our dreams, those things that we aspire to in a democracy. But then the dividing line says, if the dog goes off the leash, if the pot comes to a boil, if the fire really comes alive, this you shall not do. I was stopped at a four-way stop sign the other day, and I was stopped at a red light. So that meant I saw all the progression of all the green turn arrows, the yellow lights, the red lights, the green lights, and it's almost as if somebody was playing a symphony. The left turn light would turn, cars would move to the left. The red light would come on, cars would stop. The green light would come on, cars would go. We live in a law-abiding society. We really do. You have to see that, and you have to recognize that. But this dimension between what happens when the dog is unleashed, saying absolutely necessary and appropriate things, to when the dog becomes unleashed, you must be explicit. You must say, this you shall not do. I thought both of them did an extraordinary job.
John Schaaf, your thoughts on the governor's response? And Mayor Paul Tenhaken is going to be on this program immediately following this conversation with the Junkies, so we'll be able to hear from him directly. John, the governor has a tough role here. She's been criticized for not commenting about the death of George Floyd and really starting her comments with the protests in Sioux Falls. And so was she too late? Was she right on time? Is there more work to be done? Today she had a press conference and she talked about the time. The right thing to do now is to sit down at the table. People say, what table? What table are we sitting down at right now? What do you overall think, John, about her response to the peaceful protests and to the things that followed, the looting in Sioux Falls, the throwing rocks at police officers who were injured, people who were arrested for disorderly conduct and for looting? Overall, on the back and forth?
I find myself in violent agreement with Tom. I think he's absolutely right, is that I think both the governor and the mayor did a good job of identifying yet drawing lines, and so it's clear to people, you know, part of what makes a law function is people need to know what the expectations are. And so if people understand that the expectations are that we can protest and we can do certain things, but when we cross this line, there are going to be consequences. And I think they both balanced very nicely recognizing people's right to free speech and their right to peaceably assemble while preparing for that dog to be unleashed in Tom's nice metaphor. I do think it's the case that, you know, I noticed it as well, Lori, that the governor sort of at least started with the idea of public order, and you know the whole obviously the tinderbox that lights these protests is this death. You could, you know, someone's been charged with homicide now, so we got at least alleged homicide, and we've all, you know, you've seen the videos. I think we all know what it really is, that this horrible thing in Minneapolis, and that we need to be thinking. And I guess my thoughts are, you know, I'm afraid we're going to have yet another conversation, and we've had a lot of conversations about race and the police. But you know, I would love for somebody to give me, you know, here are three practical things you could do that would actually help the police do their job, make the people feel safe, especially minorities, African Americans in particular, feel safe around the police. What are some practical things? Because I feel like we've sort of talked this thing to death, and now is the time to actually do something. But I have to admit, I've yet to read or hear anyone give here some really credible and reasonable and actually likely to be adopted provisions that we could put in place that would actually make things better. We can certainly, you know, if you follow Minnesota or Minneapolis news at all, politics at all, they seem to have a problem with their police force. Not just racially, though that might be part of it, but the excessive use of force and kind of an unprofessionalism, to say the least, in their police force. So how do we train our police? How do we interact with people in certain situations? How can you de-escalate a situation instead of escalating a situation? And there seems to be that now this is a time for action. I'm not against talk. I'm all pro-talk, but I'd like to see some action as well.
We are going to leave it there. When Governor Noem, if you didn't hear her press conference at 10:30 here on SDPB Radio, a few things she mentioned after reporters asked her a question that essentially John Schaaf is rephrasing there. She mentioned she was asked about body cameras with law enforcement officers and the transparency. Are those public record and could they? Well, they're not public record and could they be? She talked about qualified immunity at a federal level, and she talked about civil asset forfeiture laws and contract negotiations with police departments for officers who have been charged with misconduct in the past, and thought those would be good areas to start having conversations around the table with when it comes to reforming police departments and looking into whether they need reform and how. We're going to leave it there for now because Mayor Paul Ten Haken from Sioux Falls is up next. Tom Dempster, thank you so much for being here with us today. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Lauren.
Dr. John Schaaf, thank you as well.
Thank you. Thank you, Tom, as well.